Hello.
Hello.
Was that long enough? Is your call recording?
Yes, my call is recording.
Nice.
How are you, Danny?
Don't call me that.
It's okay, don't call me Joey.
I'm good. It was a weird day. It was very hot out. I got very sweaty taking photos out in the sun when it was 108. And then on the way home, it started pouring rain and got cold, which was nice. Except the windshield wipers on my car decayed and like fell apart, and I ordered new ones and they arrived today, but not in time for me to drive home in the massive downpour. It was fun. It was an adventure.
I thought your car was out of commish because of other mechanical issues.
No. A screw just fell out, but they put it back in.
Okay. Well, that's good that you got that all tidied up and under control, except for not being able to see while you're driving the moving vehicle.
And then I came home and watched a bad movie, and then I poured some alcohol.
Yeah, because this is a show where we watch a bad movie. We talking now. Yeah, no.
It's getting to be that. I think Amanda said we have begun to make a career out of watching bad movies.
Well, I don't know. I
This is your
it
fault, though. This
depends.
movie's your fault.
Well, technically, the seed of why this is my fault is your fault.
No, that's not, you can't reverse blame it.
Yes, I can, because you said let's watch The Predator, the new Shane Black one,
Yeah.
and I said we can't really do that because we've been going in order on these. And you said we have, and I said yes. We were all the way up through Aliens versus Predator, so we need to do Aliens versus Predator Requiem
Don't
and
tell me
then
things that I don't
Predators.
remember. You could just roll with it.
Yeah. And then I sent you the link to our show that we did.
Yeah, the other Alien versus Predator. Because I remember the opening scene of that one. It's when they're in the helicopter acting badly, and then they go down the hole in the ice to the pyramid. But I just figured I saw it on TV. I don't remember that we actually talked about it, because I don't remember what happens in that movie. Much like I don't remember what happens in this movie. Although the reason I don't remember what happens in this movie is because nothing happens in this movie.
Well, that wasn't even the opening scene. The opening scene of that one was the pyramids with the predators on top and the aliens rushing up the sides, and then they
Yes,
would
of course,
explode it.
the flashback of indeterminate location and time.
Yes, because that movie's whole theory was, hey, what if Stargate but worse? And then so they had a whole thing of like the predators made pyramids and people worshiped them. And then the predators use them as a food source for the aliens so that they could hunt the aliens for prey. And when things got a little out of hand, they would blow some stuff up. And then apparently that fell out of fashion at some point that was never addressed, and they left. And then they're coming back, and there was an expedition in the Arctic that they came across, and they drilled a hole with a laser beam, and they all went down there. There was a lot of fighting. The humans were kind of in the way. And then the predators all got taken out by aliens that were a little too clever. And there
Well, there
was
was a
one
big
lady
alien.
left.
There was a really big alien.
Well, the really big alien was the queen.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So they had a queen, just like the queen from Aliens and Alien Resurrection. And they had the whole thing where the one surviving lady person from the expedition, who I can't remember the name of, because honestly, they're not really characters in that movie, other than Wayland, who is played by what's his face, who played Bishop in the original Aliens, which is
Yeah, that
supposed to be
guy.
the con it was supposed to be the conceit that Peter Wayland, the founder of Weyland-Yutani, was somehow this person, and then they made an android replica of him later, but he wasn't well, so the predators didn't want to kill him because he wasn't sporting or whatever. But whatever, he dies. And so it's just this one lady and a predator, and then they collaborate, and he makes her a little spear thing, and they hang out, and then they defeat the aliens and then the
Oh, right.
alien
So
queen up on the surface.
he puts the warrior acid scar on her face.
Yeah. And they once they defeat the alien queen, the Predator ship reveals itself, and it's demonstrated that there were a whole bunch of other Predators on the scene the whole entire time, kind of like Predator 2. And the Predator guy is like, yay, good job. And so they leave her. And then the Predators all go back up into space, but the one guy is dead. And so they're like, oh, well, this is sad. And they put him on a little, like, thing, funerary thingy by the big oval window thing. I don't know. I'm not going to judge their funeral cultures. And then the last thing of the movie is you see this alien larval whatever stage thing burst out of its chest, but it's not completely alien. It has some of the features of a Predator with the mandible mouth thing. Mm-hmm. And so that was supposed to be the big dramatic thing, and that was supposed to lead you into a sequel.
And then somebody said, what if that scene was 90 minutes long?
Mm.
And then...
What if that was 90 minutes long? And also, what if we had an even smaller budget?
and we had the guys who run a VFX house direct it.
VFX house and direct music videos, Dan.
Sure they do.
They have a repertoire.
What music videos have they directed?
Californication.
That's old news.
What's the... Well, I mean, they did this in 2004.
Isn't Californication the one that's a video game?
No.
There's a Red Hot Chili Peppers one where it's basically like they took like Tony Hawk Pro Skater and then like made Red Hot Chili Peppers people in it.
Okay, it could be that. I don't remember. I'm not really a big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. But
no,
anyway,
either.
So 2007, Brother Strauss.
What were they thinking?
Get this. Well, they had apparently pitched an Alien versus Predator thing to Fox before in addition to some other garbage. And Fox was like, yeah, that's cute, whatever. But they had apparently had enough of a relationship that when the opportunity arose to make something on a very small budget that they knew was going to require a lot of effects work, they said, what about those guys? And
they're like, we'll direct it and have our own people do it. And then we just won't pay them. And it'll be great.
Yeah.
I made that up. They probably paid them a little.
Oh, I'm sure. You'll notice that there's a very sparse artist list on this.
My Stars app punted me out of the credits immediately.
Oh, well, I watched the credits because I was like, let me see all the stuff that went on in here. And I was like, oh, just Hydraulics did this whole thing. And it's like 10 people were lighters and compositors and stuff. And it's like, okay, so that's... It's not a lot that you got going on there.
So you save money.
Yeah. Well, you save money by working them to the bone on like really long late shifts and being extremely temperamental, supposedly, allegedly, and emotionally abusive, allegedly. So I've never heard anything good about Hydraulics, but I've never worked there myself. So
I know some people that worked there.
Yeah, I've met people that have worked there. In fact, Jared Bryant, who was listed in the lighting that went by, I'm sure there may have been another name that I might have missed, but I didn't pause to actually look. But I at least knew him because I'd worked with him at Sony. So it's not like it was definitely a situation where they were able to have this work and get these people and do this stuff. But at the same time, supposedly just did not run this stuff very well. And we're not very nice to people. And, they would kind of take advantage of maybe some imbalances from them being the people who own the studio and also being the directors of things, like with Skyline and some other stuff. Like, remember the time that Sony Pictures sued them for Skyline because they were doing the effects for Battle Los Angeles for them at the same time?
Two very different movies.
It's completely different.
Ours goes ding, 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 da, ding, ding. It's that extra ding that makes the difference.
Our assets for Los Angeles are totally different. Yeah, that was all. I think they left that lawsuit on the floor when they realized that it wasn't going to get anybody anything. It was going to cost them more in legal fees, probably.
Oh no! I was just IMDb googling somebody who you and I both know who used to work at Hydraulics, and apparently he was a compositor on this movie that we just watched.
Oh,
sorry, Adam. friend of the show, Lonely Sandwich, Adam Lissigmar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the true car guy.
The true car guy, yes. The true car guy was a compositor on Alien vs. Predator Requiem.
And
his second to last film. The second to last straw that broke the Adam's back. I don't know if that's how that works.
I thought it was a turtle in Torque.
yeah, the little tortoise, yeah. That was the start of the career. It started the career with the tortoise, and then it ended with a straw. It ended with the Incredible Hulk, which can't blame him for that.
Mm. Yeah. It was Rhythm that did that. But I guess hydraulics probably helped. But so anyway, this movie, AVPR, Aliens versus Predator, Requiem.
Requiem. Which
Requiem is a very highfalutin word to use for this movie.
It's what does Merlin call them? Dumb guy words? When you say I feel very badly for people.
Yeah.
It doesn't add anything other than an additional word to the length of the title to yes. let you know that this is a different movie than the other AVP.
A mass for the repose of the souls of the dead.
What?
That's what Requiem means.
Oh, you're looking at the dictionary definition there?
Yeah.
Webster's dictionary defines a mass for the repose of the souls of the dead. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
An act or token of remembrance. A musical yes. composition setting parts of the Requiem Mass. That's great. That's wonderful there.
Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it's pretty highfalutin.
It really speaks to the deep religious spiritual undertones of this film.
Oh, man. So many undertones. So this is a movie that I think I've seen bits and pieces of in passing over the years. Like, if you walk through a room and it's on a cable television thing. Like,
yeah.
I think for a while it was in heavy rotation on FX's, DVD on TV or whatever that show is called, where they like just played 5 seconds of what they considered to be a behind the scenes special feature in between commercial breaks on a heavily edited movie.
It actually wasn't that long ago. I think it was maybe like a year ago that I saw part of it on TV. It was just whatever cable TV. James Marsden came off the bus and was like, "I used to be in prison," and the guy's like, "All right, you." It was that whole bit.
Yeah, but that's not James Marsden.
I know. That's why I called him cable TV James Marsden. Stephen Pasquale from Rescue Me. Yeah. You may recall if you ever watched the show Rescue Me.
I recognize none of these people, which I have to say is a major drawback. This movie is very poorly written by Mr. Shane Salerno. It is
That's that alcohol you
atrocious.
Put near your tiki drinks, right?
Yes. Oh, good. He's a screenwriter on Avatar 3. Oh, boy.
I really felt I felt like the Ricky kid looked familiar, but now looking at his stuff, I don't know. I mean, maybe I saw him in commercials for Sons of Anarchy, which I didn't watch, but I don't recognize any of these things.
And he did the production rewrite of the first Aliens vs. Predator movie.
Oh, that's,
and he
that's
did
good.
The Ghost Rider movie with Nicolas Cage.
That makes a lot of sense, to be honest.
Adaptation credit with Tony Gilroy for Armageddon. this is a lot of dreck.
Tony Gilroy is the lesser of the Gilroys, right? Dan Gilroy is the good one.
I'm not going to judge the Gilroys. The brothers Gilroy. The
brothers Gilroy. I would watch that over another brothers. Strauss.
Yeah, that's for sure. But it's very poorly written by Shane. It is written in many places, like it's cobbled together from bits and pieces of the previous iterations of Alien and Predator movies, with specific lines of dialogue reused, and even though it's anachronistic to use it in this setting and period and whatever.
What specifically?
Well, like they say, get to the chopper, like literally get to the chopper. And they have what's her name say, hold on, when she's driving the tank thing, the, sorry, not tank, the, whatever it is, the, it's not an amphibious vehicle, whatever the
people carrier, people mover. Yes. The Disney's people mover.
The people mover. No, but they you know, there's stuff in here. But there's a lot of bad, so there's about a lot of bad screenwriting, but then you give that to actors who obviously they could not afford a certain tier. So unfortunately a community theater somewhere in British Columbia was robbed of all of their performers for a month. It's terrible. Nobody in this movie can act concerned. No one. Not a single person can act concerned.
You know, honestly, I don't blame any of the people in this movie for their performances, because the words that they are supposed to speak are abysmal.
Yeah, well, but there is even stuff where it doesn't rely on them speaking the words. Like when the kid is seeing his father's arm in the very beginning of this movie get eaten away by acid and fall to the ground, and then he's attacked.
Well, I mean,
there is no reaction from that kid.
who's to say he was directed properly? Maybe there was just like, and then alien stuff is happening, kid, and he's like, okay, cool. And then they're like, yeah. Later they're putting in an arm dissolving. They're like, maybe he should have been more concerned. Like, well, not much to be done about it now.
And then the mother who's looking for them later, she also can't act concerned. She's being very matter of fact about the missing husband and son. So there's that. And then there's the waitress lady who is missing her, I don't know if it's husband or boyfriend, who was killed in the course of the movie too. And she acts concerned sort of ish in the sense that she's like, he would have called me, and then proceeds to do everything else like normal for the rest of her day. And then the next day and everything. And it doesn't seem like there's any gravity to any of these events of people dying around them. They seem unfazed.
Yeah.
But, there's a degree to that, which I chalk up to perhaps inexperience on the part of the actor. But as you said, this material's terrible. And the, direction that they're given, I'm sure, was not, primarily concerned with conveying the emotional gravity of the situation that they were in. It was probably just like, we need you to walk from this marker to this marker because we're going to frame this to look really sick, bro. And that's, you know, it's just, it's sort of like a failure on all levels when you get to that stage, perhaps.
It's also very, very dark. Like, I'm not generally opposed to dark movies if they're going to be suspenseful and stuff. Like, Fight Club is an incredibly dark movie, and it uses it in appropriate ways. But at this point, it's just, like, it's people in giant, like, rubber suits in like, barely silhouette rim-lighted from the distance, and you can't really tell what's going on. So it's like, okay. And now the aliens fight each other.
Yeah, but even during broad daylight scenes, they crushed the crap out of this in grading. I have no idea why the colorist did that. It doesn't look real at any stage. It looks like
cinematic and moody.
It's what a 15-year-old who just got Photoshop would think moody was if he was dialing moody dialing a photo to look moody. It doesn't work. And there are a lot of times where it actually hampers your ability to tell what's going on. And also to see certain details which may convey information to you. There's the alien predator creature, which according to the internet is supposedly referred to as the Predalien, which is not an elegant portmanteau. But...
No.
So the Predalien thing,
probably better than Alienator.
That just sounds like a horrible sandwich from Wendy's. But they have.
Or it's just a movie about somebody who just like makes all of his friends feel really uncomfortable.
It's like the Alienist. But there's, I still don't know what that show is about. But I saw a lot of billboards, and then there weren't any anymore. So maybe it's still in the air. But there was that creature supposedly produces offspring that are different, but you could barely tell any difference in anything when you're watching the movie because everything's so dark that they look almost the same as the ones that hatched from the captured facehuggers from the beginning. So it's just really unfortunate in that regard. But this movie starts with the end of the last movie with the thing on the table and the oval window and then bursts out. And then it cuts away to facehuggers being taken away in little containers to be stored. We didn't see them do that at the end of the last movie. That's kind of a retcon because otherwise you wouldn't have any of the little like foot soldier aliens to do things at the beginning of this.
I mean, you got to have a cleanup crew that comes through.
Yeah. So they have those aliens in tanks that they are keeping for a reason. And then they have
fragile glass tanks that, you know, theoretically could crack if, you know, something fell over, ship landed too hard,
someone fired a weapon inside. But they have some concern because they figure out that the thingy hatched and then grew into a thingy and then attacked a guy, and then there's another guy who freaks out and then tries to fire at it and then blows a hole inside of the ship and crashes the ship back onto Earth.
Pretty not great quarantine protocol, to be honest.
No. And it just further reinforces the fact that the shoulder-mounted plasma cannons are terrible. But they crash, and there's a predator that's in the rubble, and he does the thing to do the self-destruct, but the thingy's disintegrated by alien blood or whatever.
Now, according to Wikipedia, when I was reading the synopsis here, it says he was radioing for help, not...
not a failed destruct?
Not a failed destruct, which, you know, the predator on the predator planet gets the message eventually.
I just thought that was all automated. I didn't realize that was specifically him.
Yeah, you know, when I was watching it, I thought it seemed like a self-destruct or something because the doodad only makes, you know, like one noise.
Yeah, it's got one setting.
Yeah, it's the doot-doot-doot-doot thing that they use on the rifle thing later. But yeah, maybe Wikipedia is wrong, although, you know, it's pretty good.
It could be. It wouldn't matter either way. So
yeah, the whole planet gets the message that, oh no, something untoward has occurred, and then they tap into the very weird security camera, which looks like police sort of chest cameras, like looking around the ship or whatever to see what happened.
Yeah, he's got he can basically see the feed as recorded by the other guy's cameras because it's literally the same shots, but then he can like zoom and enhance on it and be like, "Uh-oh, that's a thingy." And so he sees that it's a alien crossed with a predator thing, and he's like, "Well, this is bad." And so he's like, "There's none but I that can intercede." And so he goes to his wall of helmets, picks out one, and then he goes on a ship all by himself. Which is, I don't know, this doesn't seem, again, like a good protocol for dealing with the situation.
Apparently his name is Wolf, so he probably, you know, he's a tough guy.
Yes, he's a lone wolf.
I'm sure...
He should have used a wolf pack.
He should have, yes. I'm sure they thought about his name for all of 5 seconds. This entire movie seems like the easy joke, like, you know... right up the middle, exactly what you would expect it to be, you know, between the reference lines, the storyline, the names and things, the occurrences between the human beings. I don't want to call them interactions or scenes or anything because it's just people with other people saying words and stuff.
Yeah. So why should it be? Anyway, so they have him dispatch and do the thing. Meanwhile, from the crash ship, there's the pred alien wandering around and the facehuggers that escape from the tanks. And the facehuggers find a father and son that were, I don't know, hunting, foraging for mushrooms, something.
They were getting ready to hunt when the ship crashed. Yes. And then they investigated like dummies. And then he like tapped the butt of his rifle on the ship and he's like, "That's metal. That's not good. We should leave." And then they both start running. But then the facehuggers that snuck out of their broken glass tubes immediately track them down and attack them.
Yes. And well, first, the guy shoots the thing at the thing and then gets the acid on the arm and his arm dissolves off. And that was kind of unnecessary gore because it doesn't, nobody really learns anything from having seen that because both of these people die. So the father then gets a face hugger on
The
his
kid's not
face.
even scared enough to run away. He just
No.
ducks back down behind the rock for a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, but like it just goes back to nobody in this movie can act concerned. So when he sticks his head back over the rock and he's just like, huh? And then he gets a face hugger. And it's just like, oh, well, I guess we're killing children in this one, but whatever. And they cut away to some guy arriving on a bus. And there's the sheriff guy. And then they have some meaningless conversation. And apparently he got out of the thing, and then they knew each other from this other thing, and then right in the back of the what it's garbage, it's all garbage. So he just had it just establishes that these are characters that know each other, will show up later. One of them is troubled, and the other one is a sheriff. And then there's a pizza delivery guy, and he has a pizza delivery order that he has to do from some twerpy guy, and so he goes to go do it. He doesn't want to go to that house, and he says, "You got to do it, or you're fired." And he's like, "Ah, I'll do it." And then he goes to the house, and then he leers at a teenage woman, girl in a very tight thing that goes out and like, what is she doing? She's taking out the trash or something. And then
She
she,
reaches in her car for something.
yeah, she reaches her car for something, and then she walks back into the thing. But the camera is the male gaze. It's on her butt, on her chest, everything, and it's him. His point of view of him leering at her, and then he pokes himself back up from the seat, and then goes and wanders over with the pizza to the door. She answers. He hands her the pizza, and she's gonna get the money. And then there's Dale, her boyfriend, there with his two friends, and they're mocking him. They're like, "Oh, nice outfit for Halloween." And he's like, "Oh, I can see who ordered the sausage lover's pizza." And it's just like they're all people. All of these people in the scene need to go away. They're just terrible. Poorly written, awful stuff. It's very 1980s like slasher thing of like some nerdy guy and the like jockey bros who are like picking on him. And it's really silly. And all the girlfriend can do is go, "Dale, Dale, stop it, Dale."
I love that the Dale has, he legitimately has Fred from Scooby-Doo's haircut from the 1960s.
It's quite a haircut. Then they are embarrassed by the sausage lover's pizza comment, so they go out and beat him up when he's getting back to his truck, and then take his keys and then throw them down the sewer drain. And they mock him and then return.
Seems like Dale doesn't have his priorities straight because even if I was mad at somebody and I wanted to beat him up, like that feeling's not better than fresh pizza.
No.
Get that pizza while it's still hot.
It's Dale is a one-dimensional, poorly written character. That is a very cliche trope that doesn't really work here. But so the kid is all grumpy and sad about that. And then we have a woman in an army I don't know, camouflage uniform with her duffel bag and everything, and she's arrived home from war and she has her husband who is waiting for her and taking care of the kid, the daughter, and it's all like, "Oh, nice to see you. And then here, have this night scope. It's yours." And then they go inside. And we have some more stuff where the guy who was beat up goes through in through the window and sees the brother. And it's the guy who got out of the pokey from the beginning. And they're there. And then there's a confrontation that is awful, where he's just like, "Yeah, you can't do that. You can't take a baseball bat and go do that thing. Let's just go find the keys together in the sewer."
Yeah, he was gonna go get revenge with his baseball bat. And to be honest, I didn't even notice he was holding a baseball bat until like he took it away from him because A, it was very, very dark, and B, I wasn't really paying that close attention.
Oh, I saw it was a baseball bat. point for me.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
You're far more attentive to this movie than I am.
More than it deserves. And so they're just like, yeah, let's just go find the keys together. And they walk out the door and they close it without locking it or shutting that window. But
Well, they had to come back in for a second take, so.
are you sure they even bothered to do a second take on that one? I think they were just like Ed Wooding this movie, and they were just like, nope, it's good. Let's just keep going.
You gotta at least get two for coverage.
But they went to the sewer. Also, meanwhile, the sheriff guy was, you know, kicking out the town's two of the three homeless people that live in the sewer system. This is basically two guys and a girlfriend of some description.
Yeah, he's like, guys, you got to get out of here. You're in everybody's way hiding down here in the sewer.
Yeah. There's like, everybody's complaining you're hiding in the sewer. And it's like, who's doing that in this town? Like, there's nobody. But
who's looking in the sewer to notice they're there?
No one. But this is all just a setup because the homeless man's dog comes back and the dog is carrying a hand which is swollen and bluish grayish purple, which is very fast, considering I thought that was supposed to be like last night, so it should look a lot fresher than that. But
this movie seems like it simultaneously takes place in 12 hours and 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Makes no
especially
sense.
Later on when we get to the final act of this, and it's just like, when did they build all these alien tunnel things in the hospital?
Yeah, there's a lot of alien material all over the place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot of excretion. But so they're just like, uh-oh, that's a hand. That's pretty bad. And then he's like, I better go wander around and find out where a hand could have come from. And then he finds a truck, and he's like, that's so-and-so's truck. And it's like, sure, I bet everybody has that memorized because it's such a small town. Although, from the wide shots of this town, it's not that small, and they have a nuclear reactor. So... It's a weird town, but he's like, yeah, that's so and so's car, and he calls it into the police station, and the police station says whoever's on the other end of the police station is just like, oh, so and so's car. He usually goes hunting with his son, and it's just like, okay, now the father and son are assumed missing, and
yeah, that's
so they start a search party.
And we definitely don't already know that as the audience.
Yeah, it's useless, and so they go searching for them at night and don't find him. Meanwhile, the predator lands in a nearby lake, and he does the water walkout thing with his cloaking device malfunctioning, and then he turns it off, just, you know, like Predator. And he's scanning around for things, and he finds the old ship, and he finds some stuff, and he takes some things, like an extra blaster thing. So he's got two shoulder-mounted plasma useless blasters, and he takes... like a kit thing, and then he also takes this blue glow stick pack that he uses to pour on things and dissolve them.
It's
throughout the course of the film. Yeah, and he triggers the self-destruct thing and blows up the predator ship. Well, sort of implodes, nuclear implodes it, and then he goes wandering around. He finds the remains of the father and son before the search party does, and he determines the cause of death to be the facehugger things, and that the facehuggers have released, and so there's little alien babies wandering around somewhere. So he pours his blue stuff on them.
Mm-hmm.
A police officer who was still going on the search, even though everybody had called off the search, comes across it, and then his radio goes off and it catches the attention of the predator, who can't have his mission be compromised by the interference of humans, so he murders him.
Was that his motivation? Is that why he did that?
I assume so. I mean, it wasn't... The predator in this movie doesn't seem to want to kill humans like as a goal so much as just sort of a side effect of him doing his job.
He's an action figure.
Yeah, it gets really weird later, especially with the main cast, where it's like he just sees them and then just continues about his business, even though the main cast keeps interfering with the stuff that he's doing. So it's just like, just kill them. But so the predator guy, he's, you know, on his mission to go do his stuff, but he's going to take a break and skin this guy.
he's Wolf. He's the Wolf. He's Harvey Keitel in a tuxedo come to clean up everyone else's mess.
Oh, you figured it out. You solved the riddle.
I bet you that's what the reference was. I don't think it's a lone wolf reference. I think they tried to be one step cleverer.
No, that was two steps too far for them. But so they have the guys do their stuff, and there's a thing at the diner, coffee shop, whatever, and the sheriff guy and the, you know, ex-con guy, they're there, and they're talking about stuff and like applying for jobs and things. And then the sheriff guy's like, oh, how did what's his face come back? And it's like, no, I thought he was searching on the thing. And then he's like, oh no, I'm sure he's still searching. And she's like, he would have called. And he's like, well, cell phone reception is pretty bad. And he's like, no, he would have called. And it's like, okay, great. Although I delivered it with more emotion and passion than she did. So
yeah, he always calls, sheriff.
Very convincing. So they have that revelation, that mind-blowing revelation, and there's various bits and pieces of things disappearing, and What's-His-Face and the kid go wander down into the sewer to go find the keys at some point, and they come across rats that are scurrying away, and it's like, oh, this is ominous, and then they come across the remains of things, like the molted skin stuff from something. And they're like, well, that's strange. And they stick their hand down, and nothing happens. And then he sticks his hand over there, and then they get out of there because they see something. They're spooked. But that's as far as that scene goes. And at some point, the Predator is like,
It's worth mentioning at this point, like, not only do very few things happen in these scenes, they're like the worst possible version of this scene that you've seen in so many other movies.
Yeah. And then The Predator comes across the sewer thing, and so he's going to go in the sewer thing. And then Ricky bumps in. Jesse bumps into Ricky, and Jesse's like, you know, I'm not with him anymore. And like, you know, I see the way that you look at me. He's like, I'm not looking at you. I'm looking at the clock behind you. It's on the wall. Turn around tomorrow, and you'll see that it's on the wall behind you. It could not be written worse. And she's like, no, I know you're looking at me. And so I like that you're looking at me because I'm not written like a real person. I'm written like an object that is just here for you to fantasize about.
So since you stare at me every day during class and my boyfriend was a jerk, I broke up with him and let's go swimming at the school after hours together, which is high school code for let's go do it in a pool.
Gross. So they make those great plans. And they have the scene of the Predator going into the sewer, and he starts affixing various little beacony things to the wall as he's wandering around, and you see the aliens lurking in the shadows here and there. And then he's finally like, okay, I looked at the map and I laid all my little trappy things, so I'm gonna summon you guys all out and flush you out to kill you. And he does, triggering the little disky things, and they shoot little lasers that dice up anything that passes through. And he starts using the blaster things to take out aliens, except he starts missing a lot of them at some point. And he gets overwhelmed by them, and eventually the Pred alien shows up and hits him and stuff, and then he fires, and then it blasts him through a wall thing, and so he can see through the ruins, and then all the aliens are like, well, this is over. Cut to an open manhole cover that the alien wanders out of, because we didn't need to see him open that, I guess.
They sped the shot up really fast, though, so you wouldn't really notice.
Yes, and then the Pred alien jumps upwards and through the ceiling of the sewer pipe that they're in, the ground and the asphalt above, to land on the street. And then the Predator is like, I can do that too. And so he does the thing, and then he punches through, and then he's standing so that at waist level, he's at the street. So how did he do that? It's not like he like jumped up part of the way and he's like, oh, I found a foothold here. But anyway, it was just because they cut to him there so that they could have him on the street too. And then the game is afoot. He's going to go chase them through the city now. Because he's flushed them out of their sewer hiding place. But we have the waitress lady, and she's still doing her job, and she takes the trash out, and then she sees some goop fall from the sky.
Is this the scene where the chef guy is like, "I'm really sorry, go home and get some rest," or whatever, and then she goes through the saloon doors and then hears a noise and comes back and he's dead and disfigured. And then suddenly she's surrounded by aliens that are acting like Rottweilers that are just like kind of growling and, you know, backing her into a corner.
Yeah. And then the Pred alien shows up and we see what would seem to be the tongue mouth thing that they do where the little second head comes out and punches through things, except we don't see it punch through anything. We just cut away before that happens. Spoiler alert. Nothing really gets punched through in the way that you think. And so they have us leave that scene off. And then there's aliens and stuff all through the town and things are weird and we got to evacuate and everybody's in their cars and the National Guard is supposed to be coming and then everybody's freaking out and nobody can reach the police station, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Go get some guns from a sporting goods store.
Yeah. And so the Predator chases aliens to the power station that is outside of town-ish, sort of, and then starts blasting the crap out of them and then blows up the, I guess, cooling stuff for the reactor or whatever. So the reactor is offline and it knocks out all the power to the town. At first, I thought it was just like, maybe this is just natural gas or a coal or something. But then when everybody shows up later and they're like, oh, no, the reactors. And it's like, what? No. For this town? Are you kidding?
I think they just used a word that they thought would be cool.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, reactors. It was in Aliens. And all throughout the movie so far, you've heard numerous little excerpts, bits and pieces of echoes of Aliens and the first Predator movie and the second Predator movie, because those are the same, where there's like that drum thing, the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun thing, and then there's also the a lot of the violas and whatever, and the alien stuff. It's kind of James Horner-esque. Of course, the score for this is by Brian Tyler, and they're quoting from the things that they want to reference. So it would not surprise me that they just wanted to have a reactor, because there's a reactor in Aliens too. But it doesn't really matter, because the reactor doesn't blow up or anything. We have something else that does that. And they decide to go back to town and look through things, and there's the calls about stuff, and in the dark, the girl uses her night vision thing and she sees an alien in the bushes and she screams for her father.
This is a Jurassic Park scene, basically.
Yeah. And, the father comes in with the mother, and he walks up to the window. He's like, "See, there's nothing out here." He turns
so
the flashlight.
Patronizing. Before they even like look out the window, they're like, "Oh, honey, when I was your age, I used to think I saw monsters all the time." And then the dad walks over. He's like, "See, nothing." And then there's giant alien and attacks him through the window. It's like, yeah you jerk.
And the army trained mother is like, "No, we need to leave now." She grabs the kid and leaves. And presumably she had some sort of self-defense guns or something in the house, but they just run into the streets. And so they leave the father behind and fend for themselves. They start making their way to the sporting goods store where everybody else is holed up, because they talk the sheriff into getting them guns while they wait for the National Guard to show up. And so
one of the best lines of dialogue, as I pointed out to you while we were watching the movie, where the sheriff's like, "The National Guard's on the way," and Stephen Pasquale's like, "Not soon enough, let's go get our guns." So they go in the store, and then like literally the next cut is the National Guard pulling up. It's like, great, good job, editors, mm-hmm. writers, all of you.
Well, you know, editing. So who knows how much time elapsed, especially with this movie.
Oh, sure. You know, a cut could be a change in time.
Yeah.
Although it wasn't, because we cut back to the store. They're just like still loading their shotguns.
Yeah. They found the lanterns. They found the shotguns and stuff. And the National Guard has arrived on scene, and they drove into town on the road that wasn't full of cars. And then they set up a thing where they're having the guys wander around and look at the stuff. And then aliens sneak up on them from seemingly obvious places that are not hidden by anything. Like there's one shot of a guy that's shot from the interior of a vehicle looking out, and where you see the blood on the window of the vehicle, and we see this guy walk up to the vehicle, and then an alien rises up from next to him, like next to and behind him. There is nothing to have obscured that alien from the guy's line of sight.
No, not at all. Just kind of so like it's just, edges in from the side of the frame.
Yeah, so it's like, just pretend that you don't see the alien down here. It's weird. But they obviously wanted to have that shot so that way they could have the blood from the guy on the window. And they do.
There's a lot of blood on a lot of windows.
Yeah, and they want to recreate the Marines scene from Aliens, where it's chaos, that the Marines don't actually have control of the situation, and there's a guy calling in orders over the radio, and blah, 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 blah. And so the aliens are attacking all the guys, and you even have some of the same sound effects of that, like, screeching noise that they make that's very similar, and the machine gun fire, alien heads exploding, and blood going everywhere, green acid blood going everywhere. And then the head army guy, National Guard guy, opens up the top and then sticks his head out, and of course gets immediately killed, but not soon enough, because he gets plenty of time to linger and look at the alien and just stand there in shock, I guess. But he dies, and so then they're all on their own. National Guard's not gonna help them now.
Yeah, you gotta call in the whoever guards the guards.
No, but the back at the sporting goods store, the mother-daughter arrive, and Steve Pascal trains his gun on them, and then is like, no, your people, and then puts out his gun. it was a little acting beat too long. Then they are all together, and then the guys from the sporting goods store stick out their heads, and they're like, you're paid $6.25 an hour for this. And they're like, are you guys high? And they're like, yo. And then the Predator tracks down aliens to the sporting goods store because the aliens are there, and they're starting to attack things, and they're firing on the aliens, and they kind of get caught in the crossfire of the aliens and the Predator duking it out. And the Dale is like, screw this, I'm gonna take the keys and I'm gonna go my own way. And that means, by the rules of, I guess, Friday the 13th, he needs to die now. So he, because in many ways, this movie has more in common with, like, an 80s slasher than it has with, like, either Aliens or Predator.
Because just it's in terms of structure, senseless and stupid, and people just die left and right randomly.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, we skipped over the pool scene where they were in the dark, and then all of a sudden aliens were there.
Yeah, of course. So not only are the aliens, like, fleeing the Predator through the sewer grate or whatever, or when, like, the power goes out, they're also on some sort of mission, like zombies, to go kill every single human in town, which they have an innate sense for where they are. But, you know, that's not the way the aliens have acted in any of the other movies, but whatever, it's fine. They're scary.
Yeah, well, I mean, they seem to be making a lot more aliens at a pretty fast rate and need to feed the little babies with plenty of human flesh. But speaking of, they had sorry, let's wrap up this pool thing. The two guys who were Dale's friends, which I don't even know if they had names, they died. And
Sidekick 1 and Sidekick 2.
Yeah, and then Dale escaped, and so he was with them in the sporting goods store. And so then Dale gets injured, because he decides to go his own way and grabs the keys, and then an alien hops on top of him, and then the Predator shoots the alien that's over Dale, not intentionally harming Dale, but the blood from the alien drips down and dissolves Dale's face.
You see it all the time.
Yeah, you know, one senseless act. We don't think about the repercussions of our actions. So it's really the deeper metaphor. Aliens versus Predator franchise. Dale's dead. But nobody really cares. And then they have the thing where they're contacting the army themselves now, and he's like, this is sheriff calling army, and army's like, this is army, go ahead sheriff.
Yeah, you can tell it's ominous because army is just a shot of the guy's mouth next to the microphone with like smoke in the room.
Yeah
go it's, to the center of the town, that's where the air vac is gonna come get you. I like that he knows the exact name of the square in the center of this super tiny town.
Yeah, well, I have to imagine it's marked on some sort of map. He seems to have plenty of maps.
Sure.
Especially for like, heat and pressure and all that other overlay stuff of what is obviously going to be a nuclear explosion that occurs at some point. But it was pretty obvious.
Which makes you wonder how long has he been planning the nuclear strike on this tiny town? Because the National Guard didn't get there that long ago.
No, they were there like 20 minutes ago. But he has, I guess, their helmet cam security footage somehow. It's not clear how that happened, because this is not a future where that kind of information could be instantly relayed. It doesn't seem to make any sense. Also, we are not entirely clear where he is until later, where he's apparently been operating on board an AWAC above the town in the clouds the whole entire time. So, okay.
Yeah,
that's why they have such great maps. But they have a... They say, like, yeah, go to the center of town. There's going to be an evac there in 30 minutes. And then you're just like... Like you said, that's ominous and weird.
Also, it's a little strange that he gave him, like, the exact timeline. Like, yeah, you're like, oh, it'll be there in an hour, and then just blow him up in 20 minutes.
Well, he said 30 minutes, and they're like, well, we'll be in the center of town in 20. And it's like, okay, great.
You know, he wants to be prompt.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know why he told them to go anywhere, but other than, you know, to try to keep everyone in the blast zone. But he doesn't know that these people are necessarily contagious. He doesn't know anything about the situation. He's just going
to
blow it up.
He doesn't know, and he doesn't care. He's seen all he needs to know. Doesn't he also look at the... Isn't he the one who looks at the TV or the video footage and goes, what are you?
Yeah. That's the helmet cam footage of him looking at the alien. Where it's like, how did you get a helmet cam footage? And
you know, the what you do when you see something that you don't know what it is you drop a nuclear bomb on it.
Yes, that's the only way to be sure. Yeah. But they
it from a very, very low orbit from an AWAC.
they have a little bit of a disagreement here where it's like, you know, we should go to the center of town and do the thing. And then the lady, after she does her best imitation of Sigourney Weaver's Ripley's Rescue, and they even have the Ripley's Rescue cue from the Aliens score, start up as she drives out of there. Although James Horner does not get a song credit as Alan Silvestri does for this movie, because I guess they reused literally parts of Alan Silvestri's score as opposed to an adaptation of it. They have a little Ripley's Rescue thing starts up as she drives the tank thingy off, and then they go to the ATV, I guess, and they go to they stop, and then they split up, and they're like, okay, you guys go to the center of town. We're going to the hospital. Know that the hospital will have a helicopter. And he says, well, unless they use the helicopter to evacuate patients already. And it's like, well, I hope I'm not wrong. And I hope you're not wrong, or we're both not wrong, or hope we're both wrong. Anyway, it's garbage dialogue, absolute trash that they say to one another.
It's amazing that the sheriff, like, of course you understand why you want them to have a dispute about why, which place would be the safe place to go to, but the military chick might have a little bit better understanding of military tactics than the sheriff, but whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, but he's the guy who was, he's the sheriff, he got on the phone and he said, I'm Gunnison, Colorado, calling for army, he decides to go to the center of town like a chump. We as the audience all know that the center of town is going to definitely be death, whereas the hospital probably will be death, because we've seen in another scene that the Predalien has occupied the infantry ward, whatever it is, the nursery thing, but not the nursery, the expecting mother's section, I don't know. Where there are like three pregnant women who are all ready to give birth in this town. And they're lined up one after another inside the hospital. And so the Pred alien is there. And now we see what happened to the waitress lady in, unfortunately, graphic detail, where the Pred alien's mouth thingy shoots down the throat of the lady who's screaming and pregnant. And then you see these lumps go through the thingy into her throat and then down into her stomach. It's very species like, in its ickiness. And so it becomes pretty clear that, they're little babies, that have been formed. How is Pred alien baby formed? The answer is in a oh, human God. Embryo by depositing, the thingies. I don't know. It seems like a weirdly cruel and unnecessary
also,
plot device.
The baby is like 9 months old, ready to come out. Like, what?
Doesn't make any sense. Because also, like you said, the span of time thing, the alien comes across this pregnant woman, the Pred alien comes across this pregnant woman, just after the power has gone out from the aliens and Predator fighting at the power plant. So they're on an emergency generator power. So that gives you a sense of the time of this. And we know that that is all the same evening. And it deposits these things, but it transforms basically these women and the hospital, because their stomachs go from being like human stomachs to being these sort of water balloons, which are absolutely disgusting and burst, and then there are a bunch of little Predator alien baby things inside. Although these are more alien-ish than Predator-ish, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's very strange. So there seems to be an unlimited number of these aliens that are running around, and it's not entirely clear how fast they grow up and from where they come from, because we know that a few came from the waitress lady who was killed like maybe 6 hours earlier, and we do know that they grow pretty fast in terms of like just watching the original Alien, etc., but we don't necessarily know how there are so many of these, because it seems like there's just like cannon fodder for the number of aliens that are around. Also, these aliens have been converting the hospital into like a hive of some kind, like they usually do, where they secrete the stuff on the walls and make like the weird Geiger stuff for the hallways. And they killed everyone in the hospital. They got this whole thing on lock.
They're surprisingly well organized and motivated, rather than just being these sort of like ruthless wild animals that we've sort of come to appreciate in the other movies.
No, well, we see their organization from Aliens onward.
For the purpose of feeding the queen to lay eggs, but in this one, I don't know. I don't really look at the Pred alien as like a queen giving orders to these other aliens.
I mean, we don't see it verbalized, but we don't see it verbalized in the others.
I guess. The Pred alien is just a queen without an ovipositor?
Basically. Which is why she ovoposits into these ladies, who are unfortunate.
Ova minuser.
Ugh. Yeah. So they have the somehow in like no time at all, this hospital has been converted, and all these pregnant women, their bellies have burst with like, you know, five or six aliens from the Pred alien hatching from them. And they come there just in time to see one of the hatching things, and there's goo everywhere. And so everybody's freaking out. And the Predator shows up, lands on the roof, breaks the glass door in a very dramatic scene, where it's just like, yeah, take that glass door. And then it goes downstairs, and they start the stuff, because the humans are trying to get out of there. And they... back out into the hallway, and they come across aliens, and they're firing on things, and then Jesse freaks out and then runs down a hallway, but the Predator was fighting aliens in the other room and had thrown the, whatever it was, the glaive shuriken thing that we saw in the other ones.
It's the
spinny thing.
What, the thing from that other movie, from Ready Player One.
The glaive.
Is that actually what it's called?
Yeah, it's called in the movie Krull, it's called
the
glaive.
That's the thing I was trying to think of. I knew it started with a K.
Yeah, well, it's from the movie Krull, but it's called the glaive in that, even though a glaive is a weapon, that does not look like that. It is a polearm. But, so anyway.
Glaive.
Yeah, I don't know why. But they have
this. It's the sword on a stick.
Yes.
Huh.
Polearm. So in Krull, it is a spinny thing. And so in AVP, they had another one of these spinny things, and in this one, they have a spinny thing. And so the guy throws the spinny thing, and, you know, it goes down the hallway at just the wrong time, propels Jesse up onto the wall, and she's killed. Pretty gruesomely. Dangly body and everything, blood everywhere.
You know, because it's a slasher movie. It's a Freddy or Jason movie, so there can't be a happy ending for the fornicating teenagers, even though they only intended to fornicate. They didn't actually in the movie.
No. He just leered awkwardly, and she's like, I'll give you whatever you want.
And he was pleading with the Predator, going, I was leering at the clock. Why? Mm-hmm.
No. Well, unfortunately, there wasn't a clock just behind her when she was propelled up onto the wall. That would have been pretty funny. But
the glaive stabs the clock instead of her. She looks back at him and goes like, huh?
Guess it wasn't her time, but it was in this case, because she dies. And then Ricky's like, ah, no. And so he takes his like AK-47 and they got it from the ATV, and then he starts shooting the crap down the hallway, not really hitting much of anything other than sort of mostly missing the alien and hitting the Predator's armor a couple times, and then they disappear down an elevator shaft. And then Pred Alien shows up and stabs
shows
Ricky
up
through
like
the torso.
The other aliens where it just steps in from outside of frame.
Yeah, as we've established many times on this movie podcast, I hate when things just show up because they were outside of frame. It really irritates me because
I know the geography of the scene. And they can't really see in those suits, so they put like one foot on the mark and then they step out and sort of lean away out of frame with the other foot, and then they just step in and do their action.
Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense that Ricky wouldn't have seen a Pred alien, but
of course not.
Or felt that its presence, because it's not a dainty thing. It's not like a slight little waif of a thing. It is enormous at this point in the movie.
Don't mass shame the Pred alien.
I love my thick, curvy Pred aliens. But the Pred alien is very demure in its attack, of course, because they don't want to completely kill Ricky. They just want to injure Ricky, because for some reason Ricky needs to survive, because we as the audience are rooting for him on some level, I suppose. It's not true. I was actually disappointed that Ricky didn't die, because I could have been done with him since the second he was introduced. But they shoot guns, and then the Pred alien goes away, and What's-His-Face picks up the shoulder-mounted cannon that had been converted into a plasma pistol that the alien had dropped, that the Predator had dropped when he was fighting the alien in the hallway.
Because he fell down the elevator.
Yeah. And so he picks that up, and he's playing with it on their way to the roof, and they pick up Ricky, and they're like, he can still make it. And it's like, shucks. And so they go to the roof to get to the helicopter, and there's aliens swarming the roof. Why? Who cares?
Because the roof is really the top of the pyramid for buildings.
it's in their instinct. But they get picked off by machine gun fire, and then he figures out how to use the plasma thingy by getting it to charge up the thingies to the thingy and then just hitting the button, and it fires the plasma thing. So they're fighting the stuff, and then the Predator shows back up and he's fighting with aliens, and then they blow a hole through the chain link fence and they all get through it. And then they go to the helicopter, and unfortunately the brother with the gun thing is still duking it out. Pasquale is still duking it out with everybody. And he needs to get to the chopper. They literally have a line. She's ready to go start up the thing, but they can't leave because of the brother. Ricky's like, oh, we gotta use my brother. And then the predator starts fighting the pred alien, and Ricky gets to the chopper, and then, they fire on the thing through the windshield, and they fire on the thing that was coming up, and then they do some more firing, and then he gets on the thing, and then they take off, and then we get to what this movie has been all about, and that is the most disappointing fight you've ever seen, because the Predalien versus the Predator, it's just two guys in very bulky rubber suits hitting each other on a rooftop, and then it eventually gets to the point where the Predator does the move of I'm gonna drop all my weapons and fight you.
Oh, sure. He's got a for honor, take off all of his gear, including his mask, which he has to do in the exact same two-hand motion that they've done in all of the other movies, where you like lead with the thumbs and you keep the fingers very pointed, and then pull the mask off.
Yeah, and you really have to respect the Predalien's observance of this ritual, because it just sits there the entire time he's doing this. It's not a brief activity to take off that mask and drop all the weapons. But he does it, and then they start duking it out by just running at each other and grabbing their shoulders and going, and sort of wrestling, like, vaguely, without doing too much damage to the rubber suits. And they just keep flinging each other around on the rooftop for a little while.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
it's a good show. It's a new storyline for the WWE.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Mr. the General of the Army, he's like, God save us all, blah, 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 authorize. And of course, he has nuclear launch codes, I guess. And so the F-24, F-35, whatever it is.
22.
F-22. it's got the thingy, and it drops the thingy, and then it blows up the town, and all the people in the square, they're all like, yeah, we're ready for the air evac, Mr. Army. And he's like, yep, that's coming. And he's like, no, we're really ready for it right now. And he's like, yep, totally coming. And so they're all annihilated by a nuclear explosion that wipes out everything in the town. I really questioned the desire to set off this nuclear explosion, because there was a reactor in this town that's also nuclear. So what the heck happened with that? It just seems like this was not a good plan. But
there was no time to think, Joe. They just had to act.
Yes. And so they're on their chopper, and it gets blown by the explosion, and then they crash land, and then Squall comes to, and then, you know, Ricky's being looked over by what's-her-face and the daughter, and, you know, everybody's there, and then the army, like,
the
comes out of
there,
the bushes.
Drop your weapons. No, you drop your weapons, and then they drop their weapons, and then he makes a joke like, told you not to crash or whatever. And then he's like, we need an ambulance for my little bro.
Yeah. And he's like, you killed everybody in that town. And he's like, just following orders. And then
he's
they don't
like,
kill.
Yes, sure. Fine.
And then they don't kill the only witnesses to this.
You expect that. I mean, they've been willing thus far in the movie to go like, yeah, well, the army is going to be ruthless and blow people up, and we're killing love interests and stuff. So, shoot him right there. Just shoot him.
Yeah. But for some reason, they're like, well, they dropped their weapons, so we got to take them in now, guys. we got to get the medical attention, maybe a hug, a nice warm blanket. We did murder everyone they know and destroy their homes, but whatever. So then you're like, well, that's the end of the movie, right? With this. And nope. Then you have a line with the daughter, where she says, Mommy, are the monsters gone now? And she says, yes, sweetie, while the army is swarming around them, the army that murdered everyone. And it's like, the real monsters are still there. But the movie
the
doesn't know that.
The monsters are in heaven with your dad.
Yeah. So then you're like, well, this is definitely the end of the movie now that we had that unnecessary bit of dialogue that was totally inappropriate. Nope. We cut to Mr. General, the army guy, and he's got a briefcase. And of course, we know what's in the briefcase, which is the alien technology.
It's the gun.
He has the thing and he puts it on the table and he opens the briefcase, as you do. And in the briefcase is a bunch of foam that holds the gun thing in place, because of course it does. And there is a lady there. And he's like, it's not of this world. And it's like, the world is not ready for this. And it's like, yes, Miss Yutani. And it's just like, on, dun, dun. And it's dumb. So dumb. It's really dumb. I hate it. I absolutely hate it on every level.
Yeah, it's a real stupid movie.
Yeah, but especially this ending, just tacking this on. It was just like, what an extra little bit of spite. It's just like, wait, wait, wait. You're leaving the movie theater. Hold on, let me spit on you.
truly a movie made by the visual effects industry.
This is awful.
On your way out the door, also, F you.
It really bugs me because the Aliens versus Predator was lazy and bad in a number of ways that we enumerated in that episode. And then this one took lazy and bad and said, hold my beer. And
it took and bad and gave it a Four Loko and some Adderall.
It is so scattered and nonsensical and lacking any emotional core and seems to be made up entirely of cliches and tropes of other things, including other things in the series, but also predominantly what seems to be like 80s slasher stuff, where you got to punish the teenagers. And it's just like, this is gross. It's internally, anything that might be considered like politics or logic or anything, like, you know, even in Aliens, you got like, well, the company's bad. This is capitalist greed that's causing this. This is hubris of the military that they're going to destroy something that they don't understand or think they control something that they don't understand. This is the movie where they're just like, yeah, we're just going to blow up stuff. And then they blow up this other thing. And then some people die. And then we got to punish this teenager because, you know, she got naked for the other guy at the pool. And so that's bad. So she needs to die. It's just like, who wrote this? Like, what's the symbolism of any of this? What is the meaning of any of this? No, you just wanted to have these things fight. And so we get to the end of this movie where the two guys in a rubber suit fight on the roof. And it's just like, blah. Because at first I was like, just give me a movie that's just the Alien and Predator scenes cut together and get rid of all the teenage garbage stuff. But then by the end of it, where you just get the two of them fighting, you're just like, this is incredibly unsatisfying in and of itself. Like, even if you didn't have to contend with the garbage characterization that they attempted to try to maybe kind of hint at doing, you still have what amounts to action figures smashing into each other.
Yeah. I got nothing for this movie. I mean, you've said everything that I've been thinking. There's barely anything in this movie, and what's there is just like unsatisfying.
Mm.
And I'm still just we watched this because you made me watch this before we can get to the other one that may or may not be of any sort of reasonable quality.
No, it's well, I already know it's not. So I just want to make sure
you want to draw out the torture.
Well, I just want to make sure that we, like, I don't want to do that one and then be like, well, maybe the other ones were not as bad or something. I want to make sure that we have appropriately gauged our expectations.
Sure. Well, I know what's coming next.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I saw this one, too. You did see this one.
That's right. That's right. You're familiar with the Topher Grace Predator.
And then Lawrence Fishburne shows up. And the movie goes crazy.
There you got Lawrence Fishburne. You got Topher Grace in a Predators movie. Why not? And then Adrian Brody, whose weapon of choice is a gigantic automatic shotgun. He's an idiot.
I mean, I will say, at least in that case, they hired people who could attempt to deliver the lines as bad as they are.
Yeah, but then you got that weird sort of samurai showdown in the high grass scene, yeah. And it's just like, what?
I didn't say the directing was any good, but so anyway, we did this one, and you know, let's just read canceled sequel and future from the Wikipedia page.
Oh, was it
during the production?
Go ahead.
The production of Aliens vs. Predator: Requiem, comma, the brothers Strauss expressed plans for a third Alien vs. Predator installment. Period. However, the planned sequel was put on hold indefinitely. Period. The Predator franchise continued with Nimrod Atal's Intal's Predators and Shane Black's The Predator, the latter of which featured references to AVP, such as shurikens and Lex's spear, which Scar made out of an alien tail, while the Alien franchise proceeded with Ridley Scott's Prometheus and Alien : Covenant period. I mean, it's just all good stuff, really.
I mean, to be honest, like, Alien Covenant is an incredibly attractive-looking version of this same movie. It's equally as garbage.
I think it's putting on even more airs than just this title, unfortunately.
Yeah, now that AVP has merged the Alien and Predator series, are we going to have to watch the aliens as well as part of this thing here?
Oh, Dan, we've been building towards that every year.
Right, I know, but like, are we doing that now or are we saving it?
Oh no, we're saving it. Okay. Because they are no longer intertwined, at this juncture, since the brothers Strauss did such an amazing job, and the fantastic writing of one Mr. Shane Salerno, this terminated any connection between the two, so we don't have to worry about that. There are no alien skulls or predator skulls that are bouncing back and forth between these. They're diverged after this. We are still going to do all of these horrible things, especially our yearly visit to the Alien franchise, because
just one.
Well, we do one a year. We've done one a year since we started this podcast. Oh, we did Resurrection last year. So you know what that means?
Does that mean Prometheus is next?
Yeah. And then the year after that?
Covenant.
Yep.
Have you seen Covenant?
Yes. I didn't think anything would make me angrier than Prometheus did.
Exactly. You think Prometheus, this is a gorgeous movie and it's stupid and you squandered your opportunity. And it was a little bit angering the way you treated these things that we appreciated. And then you get to Covenant and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
You heard my criticisms of the first movie and assumed they were praise and did more of it.
Well, that's just the work of an auteur.
Oh, sure. He's like, you know, the more you complain, the more I'm going to whip you is basically what he's doing.
Yeah, the aliens will continue until morale improves. But
can that be the title?
I feel it's a little unrelated, but sure, maybe. They don't. Fox does not know what to do with this. The people who are producing this at Fox don't know what to do with this. They tried to put them together. They tried to pull them back apart. They tried to reboot them several times.
Sony Spider-Man thing where they won't relinquish the control over this very valuable intellectual property, even though they have no idea what to do with it.
Well, they're not it doesn't get relinquished to anyone. They just have the same producers that have been working on this for a really long time.
Okay, so we just need them to retire or die.
Well, let's be a little nicer than die. But I'm
just saying those are the options. Both of those would achieve the result we're looking for.
Yeah, I suppose. Although I'm not going to take any responsibility if either of them were just suddenly dropped dead.
For one over the other.
Yeah, but you know, you got Walter Hill and was it David Giler, whatever. You know, all these. They've been working on it for forever. They got the rights to do this stuff. They can make whatever garbage they want to. And so they frequently do. And every now and then they try to reboot it with different amounts of money and different tactics. They haven't hit on any formula that seems to actually work because, like we said, we've seen what's coming and it's all bad.
It's very pretty, and there's some very interesting concepts in them, but it's all just wasted.
Well, I know that Predators is not pretty.
Oh yeah, Predators. Yes.
Yeah, I you know, just including both of these in that criticism.
Yeah, we don't know what's up with The Predator quite yet.
Yeah, neither one of us have seen that one. I saw part of it on an airplane seat back a couple rows over that somebody was watching.
Mm.
I wasn't really paying attention, but I was like, huh.
Given that it hasn't really been lauded so much publicly, it's probably safe to assume it kind of misses the mark.
Oh, I think it's more than safe. I believe it is publicly derided.
Mm. Oh, I haven't seen much public derision. I've seen a lot of silence.
Well, the silence is derision, Dan.
That's not how that works. Maybe they just don't want to spoil it.
I love it so much I don't want to talk about it.
Maybe they have very complicated feelings about it.
Mm. Very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to ruin it for people. Are we done?
Yes.
Good, because it's hot in here. And I'm almost out of corn whiskey.
Corn whiskey?
Yeah. I picked up a bottle of Rye Amadon's favorite mellow corn.
Is that the name of it?
Yeah. He posted a bottle of it somewhere. Did he text it to me? He texted it to me.
Okay. It's just called Mellow Corn.
It's called Mellow Corn. It's got this very ridiculous old-looking bottle. It's got a screw cap or whatever. He said somebody recommended it to him. It was, he paid $20. It was $13 here. It smells like the kind of alcohol we used to drink in high school, but it tastes actually pretty good. It's got a little bit of a sweetness to it. I put a couple of very expensive cherries in this very inexpensive whiskey, and it's very good. Also at Rye's recommendation.
Well,
mostly because this movie in particular did not warrant cracking open the good whiskey. I got another bottle of the Chestnut Farms, which is quite good.
I think that might
be my new favorite, by the way.
Chestnut Farms?
Yeah, the one with the horsey on it.
The horsey. Okay. Now, is it whiskey or is it bourbon?
It's bourbon. The chestnut is bourbon.
Okay. But the corn whiskey you're having is whiskey.
The corn whiskey is it's not bourbon.
Okay.
I was about to type in corn whiskey. Mellow corn. It's got a cool looking bottle. You should Google it real quick. It's it looks like a bottle you found in a barn from like 40 years ago. Straight corn whiskey. Oh, bottled in bond was the big thing that
right. This looks like an old Mountain Dew bottle.
No, it looks like the hipster syrups that people put in your coffee.
This looks like an old soda.
That's actually pretty tasty.
If you're looking
for an inexpensive whiskey to supplement your expensive whiskeys.
I'm unconvinced.
My bar was low in stock. So I got a good.
I thought you meant your bar was low in terms of critical.
No, it's I have a bar cart now. Did I tell you that I got a bar cart for Christmas?
Oh,
it's nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Stuck that with some nice incomparable coasters. But I got the corn whiskey. I got the nice bourbon. I got a little bit of Christmas scotch left over, and I got a bunch of. I just cracked open the most recent jar of Luxardo cherries because I was still rocking those, the white jar, Amaro or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that they have to be over a year old and they're probably not good, but I open them and they look fine. There's no mold in there, which also is concerning because I know you said you put yours in the fridge and you got mold in a couple of months, and I have never seen mold in a year in these cherries. But I figure rather safe than sorry in this one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have never managed to like keep it a year, but
just don't refrigerate it apparently is the trick, and just make sure the lid is very tight.
That also seems disconcerting. We should get noted food expert Dr. Don.
Yeah, we should get Dr. Don to answer this question because I feel like they're drowning in such a thick sugary syrup that they should be preserved okay.
Mm-hmm.
But oh, that's a good looking bottle.
It is. What I have sent Dan is the bottle of St. George all-purpose vodka, which is a very pretty bottle, and that is a San Francisco distillery, mainly notable for, I believe, their gins and other things. And
these people who made this label counterfeit money. It's okay. The design is too good. It's too good.
Yeah, it's a nice bottle. It was on sale at the BevMo for like $2 cheaper than Tito, and I was like, well, I've had their other things, so I was like, I might as well just try it.
Well, that's even a bottle that you could leave sort of empty, sitting on top of something just for like decoration for a little while.
I don't live in a college dorm room, Dan.
It's not an empty Sam Adams bottle. It's like if you got one or two decorative type bottles that you can place in an area.
Yes, for people to admire.
No, just to
look
sort
at this.
Of
look at this booze
out.
I've consumed.
Exactly. It's not for. Oh God, never mind.
It's for your private park art display.
It's the design. It's a nice looking bottle.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's bottle up this episode.
Hmm. This is the after show, right? We're not actually leaving this shit in, are we?
Oh, well, I didn't put the end marker in, so I'll put it in now.